spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, giving you positive Nigerian energy, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. This is Spirit of Nigeria Radio Sunday, Nigeria Discuss. And as advertisers promoted, we have with us Mr. Olawale Akoni, Senior Advocate of Nigeria. We will be conversing today, discussing three major issues about the Nigerian nation. And of course, he will be weighing in on some of those issues and clarifying issues for us as a senior advocate of Nigeria. The first topic we'll be discussing will be election tribunals. Of course, later we'll talk about the NBA crisis, the Kama review, and I think we should be skirting around the Chinese loan and Nigeria's sovereignty. You're welcome to the program, Mr. Olawale Akoni, S-A-N.
Radio station, and I hope that everybody around the world is listening, particularly our friends in the diaspora. And I think it's an opportunity for everyone to get a grip and a grasp of what is happening down here in Nigeria. Thank you very much for inviting.
All right, thank you very much. Let me just let our listeners know, Mr. Olawale Akoni, Senior Advocate of Nigeria, is the managing partner of Babalaki and Co. He was conferred with the rank of Senior Advocate of Nigeria in the year 2006 and is recognized by Wu's Wu Legal Magazine, the official research partner of the International Bar Association and the Legal 500 Europe, Middle East and Africa Directory, as one of the top business lawyers in Nigeria. He is a notary public for Nigeria and has been approved by the Nigerian Securities and Exchange Commission to carry out legal services in the Nigerian capital market. He has acted as chairman of the High Court of Lagos State Civil Procedure Rules Review Panel and committee chairman on judicial appointment and bench relations of the Nigerian Bar Association. I think I should just stop here, because if I continue reading, it will take the whole day. All right, you're welcome to the program. Now, the first thing that I want us to discuss is Nigeria, elections, petitions, tribunals. Why do you think Nigerians go to court after electoral defeats? You may say to me that it is their legal right, but then the preponderance of election cases, petitions, tribunals has made absolute nonsense of election or the electioneering process in Nigeria. And of course, let me add that lawyers are now disputing elections. The medical profession, NMA, disputing elections. What exactly do you think is a problem?
Okay, thank you very much. It's a very difficult question to answer when you ask why people go to courts or tribunals to challenge the results of election petitions. We are Nigerians, and I think it does the Nigerian in us.
Mm.
The way the political landscape is, it's a winner-take-all situation.
Mm-hmm.
We have an executive presidency and an executive governorship at the state level. It's a winner-take-all situation. So that is why you find out that when the winner of the election at the presidential level or at the governorship level, particularly at the federal level, the party that wins, very, very likely, within a year and a half, quite a number of people from the other parties come to the main party, the winning party. It's a winner-take-all situation. All the resources of the state are under the control of this governor, and there's very, very little left for any other person to look at. So what then tends to happen is that everybody realizes that it is very, very important to be the one in charge, to be the one in control. Yeah, we have not developed our institutions to the point where accountability is the important thing. So the president has control over the purse strings, and the governor has control over the purse strings. So at the end of the day, you find out that everybody wants to be in the winning side. So, if you contest an election and you don't win, you believe that you need to make an effort to try and obtain the election result because you want to get there. Now, as to the system of elections themselves, there are a lot of flaws, and that is why people don't trust the system.
Mm.
Even if a man has lost hands down, he believes that he may be able to overturn it. And you would find out that in some situations over the last several years, things have happened.
Mm.
I mean, recently we all know in Imo State what happened. Someone who came third or fourth.
Mm.
He's now the governor. There were technical issues and several issues, and the Supreme Court came to a decision. Here, we're not discussing the Supreme Court decision on that matter, so I'm not going to go in there, but I'm just making the point that there is always the chance that if you go to court, you just may win. And the goal, the prize is so, so big that people will make an attempt to do it.
Okay. All right. I hear you loud and clear, but I was even going to ask you about the Supreme Court decision, because lawyers go to court, or at least recently, lawyers went to court to challenge a Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
How much is the legal profession contributing to all of this, whatever we have as the situation in terms of electoral tribunals? Also, bearing in mind that lawyers make a lot of money by going to court, is it not possible for lawyers to just say, sorry, I mean, you don't have a good case, but they will still go up to the extent of challenging a Supreme Court decision?
Well, I think in principle, there is nothing wrong in seeking the Supreme Court to review its decision. Mm. In principle, the law allows it, the rules allow it. It's just that the parameters are very, very limited.
Mm.
They're very, very limited. I mean, I'm aware of situations where people have gone to court to challenge a Supreme Court decision on the basis of lack of jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court actually reversed this decision on the matter.
Hmm.
So it is not like as if a lawyer going to court to challenge a Supreme Court decision is inherently wrong. It is whether you have gone on the parameters that are allowable under the law. Now, yes, look, I mean, people say this thing, but I keep on answering with this, that there are good lawyers, there are bad lawyers. There are good doctors, there are bad doctors. There are good TV presenters, there are bad TV presenters.
I hear you.
We're everywhere. So, the mere fact that some people went to court and sought to challenge something doesn't mean that lawyers as a group are the ones causing these problems. Yes, if anyone does something wrong, the rules are there, and the Supreme Court can take decisions and actions against someone who has done something wrong. Yes, it is true, when you come in to a lawyer's office to brief him on something, yes, he has a duty to review your matter and tell you his own view and his opinion as to whether your application or your case has a likely chance of success or not. But at the same time, there are also situations where it is this sort of application that actually helps you develop the law.
Mm.
So I don't think we can wave aside the fact that applications are brought because we don't like the sound of the application does not mean that it cannot be properly brought. Yes, I accept that in countries where these rules are where institutions are more developed and where the ethical conduct is higher. I mean, I'm aware of situations where we have tried to instruct a lawyer in England to do an appeal on a criminal case. And after he reviewed it, he said he cannot find any good and viable ground of appeal. And he knows that if he goes on appeal on these grounds that he acknowledges are not good and viable, he will get sanctioned by the authorities.
Now we are talking.
Yes, and here in Nigeria as well, people do that as well. But you see, when you have a situation where the entire system has problems, you would always have these sort of issues coming up. And the Supreme Court has not shirked its responsibilities. It has hit people with fines, it has hit people with substantial costs on matters like this. So I don't think it's an area that one should continuously battle lawyers over.
Okay, so, but does that, you know, is it, okay, let me put it this way. Can we safely conclude that we are generally bad losers in Nigeria?
Oh, I think to a large extent you are correct. We are definitely bad losers. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the interest of the nation and the interest of the system sometimes dictates that even though you feel bad about something that has happened, you just have to accept it. I mean, we all remember the Al Gore and Bush situation in the U.S. several years ago. I mean, the Supreme Court came up and said that the recount had to just end because the time was really going. And at the end of the day, Gore felt hard done by, but he had to accept it. And that was it. I mean, even in the last elections, Clinton and Trump, it was clear Clinton won the majority of the votes. But the Electoral College system made her lose, and there was really nothing she could do. So, but here, we would always make an effort to try, because as I said, the prize is really, really great. And everybody, there's so much power in those offices, uncontrolled power, unaccounted power, unaccountable power in all those offices. So people really, really want it.
All right. So I think the last presidential elections, the one that brought in President Muhammadu Buhari, President Goodluck Jonathan, you know, agreed and he moved on. He didn't bother to contest it. I think that was a bit statesmanly, if you ask me. And with a few more Nigerians like that, the landscape is going to change. Because
I agree with you.
Yeah, because what we find right now is that it's not only the politicians or the hardcore politicians. We are talking now about the NBA, the NMA. You know, that was even bad. I think somewhere in Port Harcourt, they started throwing chairs and all of that. But it has gotten to a point in Nigeria that if you are contesting elections and you are drawing up a budget, there is typically a budget for election tribunals. Because from day one, you are saying, either way it goes, you know, I'm likely to be sued or I'm going to sue somebody. And I know that for a fact. When you are drawing up the budget for an election, you say, what about the one for the tribunal? So we are generally bad losers. And of course, for the interest of Nigeria, I think something else has to happen so that, you know, people will begin to understand that it's not a do or die affair. I agree the price is easy. I mean, the stakes are high, honestly. And which is why at this point, maybe we should ask ourselves some serious questions and just hang on, listen to this. And of course, we'll continue when we come back. Nigeria is heading to? Which way Nigeria is heading to? That is the question that Sonny Okosos is asking us. Do you have an idea, sir, which way Nigeria is heading to, given what is happening in the political circle? Okay, let's go to something else, because I was going to play Fela Nicola Kuti's "Teacher Don't Teach Me Nonsense," but I think it was too heavy, so I ran away from that, which says democracy, crazy demonstration of crazy.
I actually wonder whether I can just make one very, very quick point here.
Very good, very good.
You see, it's okay to say that we're bad losers. Yeah, that I think is the given. However, the process itself also creates a big problem, and people don't trust the system, and they don't trust the process. So when everybody realizes that the process that we're using is flawed, it makes accepting the verdict of the election itself quite difficult and a bitter pill to swallow for some people. So, and I'm not giving excuses now, but I'm just saying to you that we need to examine and review all these electoral processes themselves.
You want to be a bit more specific so that our listeners can understand better when we say some of the processes are flawed?
You see, okay, it's very, very easy for people at election time. Thugs are sent out into some areas. I've conducted election petitions in different parts of this country, and I have seen the reports of things that happen, heard evidence from people directly as to things that happen. And electoral sheets, result sheets are captured, ballot boxes are carted away, and it's done by both sides. Don't get me wrong. It's done by both sides. So when the result comes out, of course, it's just a matter of like, oh, it was because I wasn't strong enough, I didn't have enough armed men, that is why I lost this time. So the next time, I'm going to put a larger budget for the armed people, for thugs and all that, to ensure that I overwhelm the other side with my own. So, and there's really nothing the police is doing. There's nothing the security forces are doing. Some are even complicit on these matters. So it's the processes need to be looked at again.
All right, I hear you. Okay. I think we're our first quarter. We've talked about the electoral process, electoral tribunals, and petitions in Nigeria. Now let's move to the crisis in the Nigerian Bar Association, the infighting that led to the formation of a parallel association to the Nigerian Bar Association is one of the most unfortunate fates to befall the association. It's an ill wind that blows nobody any good, neither the body nor the Nigerian people, that are supposed to be the ultimate beneficiary of the rule of law, which the lawyer's body is expected to champion. Now, while the association is not new to crisis, it has managed to keep itself from being fraternized to the present level. In the past, when groups of lawyers formed association, it was not done to spite or break away from the main body of lawyers, but rather to specialize in some areas of legal development. That's not the situation that we have right now. Now, three key areas that we need to look at. One, the elections of the NBA. Two, is there indeed a generational gap or issue? And of course, this northern breakaway. Let's start with the election crisis. What is your own take on it? The election was not considered to be free and fair.
Well, I'm not sure that I agree with you on that. I think the elections were free and fair. And there were definitely flaws in the run-up to the election. The person who eventually won actually complained to the electoral body about several issues even before the election. So there's no gainsaying the fact that there were flaws, there were technical glitches and all that in the run-up to the election. But I don't know, when people say it wasn't free and fair, I don't know where they're getting that from. People who voted, and their votes counted. Yes, I know that quite a number of people said that they were not able to vote because of technical glitches and all that. But all these issues have been looked at by the Board of Trustees of the NBA, and a landing was reached that it is important to review, and this is something else I mentioned earlier on, to review the processes and the and all these issues leading to the elections to ensure that we don't have this kind of crisis in the future. Mm. But honestly, I don't agree that the elections were not free and fair. No.
Okay. All right. But so where is the crisis coming from?
Well, right now, I mean, the issue you're talking about, the crisis about this faction that say they have set up a new NBA.
Yeah, that's on the one hand, because that largely was from the disinvitation of the governor of Kaduna State. The other one, there's some Southern lawyers, and I think their spokesperson is Nii Akitola, SAN, and they're threatening also to pull out from the NBA.
Now, you see, I am very involved, so my ability to express clear and free opinion here is a bit stultified. However, I think we all need to understand that the Nigerian Bar Association is one association.
Yeah.
And there will always be crises. There have been crises in the past about elections and all that. Now, the truth of the matter is that there's a rotational system in the NBA for the presidency in particular. It goes to the north, east, and to the west. The west is made up of two sections, the southwest and the Middle East, the Middle West, the old Middle West, as we used to know it.
Yeah.
Now, the issues that have been rocking the West on this issue, I mean, are really a matter of whether it's the West, Southwest, or the Midwest that should go in for this thing, and people should vote one way or the other. And as I said, I'm not going to go deeper into all that issue. Mm. However, the important thing for me is that the main actors in this whole matter need to sheathe their swords and ensure that when the election, the presidency comes back to the West in another 6 years, new alliances will be formed and new patterns will be agreed to. To ensure that the people who are complaining today are able to convince other people to ensure that they get what they want. But honestly, I do not see that issue as a crisis that is capable of breaking the NBA. No, I do not see it.
All right. What about the issue of San or no San should be the president of the NBA, and of course the age vis-a-vis generation gap that also came up
with all today. With all seriousness, I think it's a non-issue.
Mm.
Non-issue, because there have been non-Sans who are president of the NBA.
Mm.
I will go personal now. My father-in-law, your father, Iro SAN, when he became this president of the NBA, he was not an SAN.
Mm.
And there were several SCNs around at that time. So, and Alao Akaba Shorun, of blessed memory, when he was chairman of president of the NBA, it wasn't an SCN.
Mm.
So, there, as I said, it is a non-issue. And I don't think, it is a service to the association for anyone to pitch this as a fight between SCNs and non-SCNs. There is nothing in the Constitution of Nigerian Bar Association that says that you need to be an SCN before you can become president of the bar.
Fantastic.
I mean, so really, as I said, it is honestly a non-issue, and I think the earlier we actually stop discussing that point, the better for us. We are there are more important things for us to look at in the NBA. As for the issue of generational gap, yes, there is no doubt that over the last, I would say maybe in the last 5 to 10 years, the number of young people who have been called to the bar has been phenomenal.
Mm.
They constitute the largest, if I would say, voting bloc in the NBA. So there is no doubt that young lawyers are a major constituency in the NBA. And anyone who wants to lead the NBA definitely must take into account issues concerning the young lawyers. And I would say that all the three candidates for presidency had their programs cut out for young lawyers. They knew that it was very important to get the young lawyers on their side and all that. Young lawyers today are everywhere. There's so many of them being turned out of the Nigerian law school every year. And they have different kind of problems. Welfare issues, salary issues, employment issues. Mm. And there's so much happening. And there's no doubt that they constitute a major group in the NBA. And anyone who wants to lead the NBA definitely has to take account of that.
Just that right now they chose one of their own, so to say, because...
It's a democracy.
Yeah, I mean, my job is just to throw up the questions. I don't make assumptions or conclusions. It's for you to tell us. But there's this other issue of a note or some form of communication by an older generation lawyer, and that triggered, you know, all the young people to mobilize themselves to say, why must you say it shouldn't be, you know, one of us? Maybe if that didn't happen, it would have, you know, gone the other way. But because of that singular communication, it became an issue, or well, a campaign issue.
I don't know I don't know how much of an effect that communication had, but no doubt that the communication was read by so many people, and they would have made their opinion, their minds up, either for or against the views expressed in that communication.
Okay, so the final conclusion.
Author was the highly respected senior advocate and major leader of the bar. Must have had his reasons for writing it, and but as I said, it's an election, it's democracy, and people decided to go the way they wanted.
Okay, so matter of fact, the NBA constitution does not talk about sand, does not talk about age. So we're on the right track. Okay, finally, on this NBA crisis, let's look at the breakaway by the Northern Lawyers. How did we arrive here?
Again, that is one area that I don't know how we arrived there. I wonder whether seeking to create a new faction or a new body or a new association is the appropriate response to the fact that an invitation to a governor was withdrawn by the NBA. The invitation was withdrawn as a result of a resolution passed at the National Executive Council of the NBA. That is the highest decision-making body of the organization. It is made up of several people. I mean, it's not a body that is made up of just a few hand-picked people. There are scores of people. All the state chairmen, all the branch chairmen are members. Past chairman, past presidents are members. It's a major body that takes decision on the for the NBA. Whether I agree with the withdrawal of the invitation or not is not really important here. But the fact of the matter is that it was tabled and it was passed by a resolution of the body. And if people felt aggrieved by that, there are internal structures in the NBA that could have been adopted to deal with such issues. I do not believe that by itself now creates an issue as to setting up a Northern NBA. I really don't understand. We don't have a Southern NBA or an Eastern NBA or a Western NBA.
You are just about to have a Southern NBA led by Nia Akitola.
Well, I don't know. I'm certain that whatever they are talking about, they were not thinking of setting up a Southern NBA. I'll be almost certain that their thought process is not to set up a Southern NBA. You see, we need to again stop this regional talk amongst ourselves. There's one Nigerian Bar Association. You are called to the Nigerian Bar, not to the Southern Bar, or to the Western Bar, or to the Eastern Bar. Yes, there are branches of the law school in different places. But when they're going to call everybody to the bar, they are called to the bar at the headquarters of the Nigerian Law School, which is in Abuja. Everybody goes there is called to one bar. So we need to understand. You see, tempers have gone high on several issues, and I think it's just important that the leaders of the bar intervene and try to calm nerves down across the board to ensure that all these people stoking the embers of crisis are calmed down, and we definitely have a lot of work to do. One of the very important things that the new president is saying that he wants to be the president of a united bar, one bar, and that is what he has set up as his goal. He's reaching out to everybody across the spectrum to ensure that all issues that people have are tabled and addressed, so that all these crises can be dealt with and all the issues ameliorated.
All right. Okay. All the issues ameliorated. And I believe that this is a good point for us to take another break, because this is halftime already on the show, Nigeria Discussed with Olawale Akoni, SAN. And we'll be talking about election petitions and tribunals in Nigeria. And, of course, we just dealt with the NBA issue. Our job is just to throw up some of these issues and we get your legal perspectives. But whether it's the election petition tribunals, whether it's the NBA, either way, one thing I'm sure of is Nigeria will survive. Let's take a breather. When we come back, this conversation continues. Still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, positive Nigerian energy we bring to the media space, because we know that Nigeria will survive. We bring Nigerians in diaspora up to speed as the authentic source of Nigerian information, and the program is still Nigeria Discussed. And today we have been discussing with Mr. Olawale Akoni, Senior Advocate of Nigeria, and we'll be treating two key subjects election tribunals and petitions, and of course the crisis in the NBA. Now it's time for us to move to some other subject, some other topic on Nigeria Discussed today. On the 7th of August, President Muhammadu Buhari signed Karma into law. Under the law, religious bodies and charity organizations will be strictly regulated by the Registrar General of Corporate Affairs Commission and the Supervising Minister. Karma provides that the Commission may, by order, suspend the trustees of an association or a religious body and appoint an interim manager or managers to coordinate its affairs where it reasonably believes that there had been any misconduct or mismanagement, or where the affairs of the association are being run fraudulently, or where it is necessary or desirable for the purpose of public interest. Okay, so that's the scenario that we have. And of course, it has generated a lot of controversy, especially from Christendom. More importantly, from the Pentecostal churches. The Muslims are not complaining, the NGOs are not complaining as much, but the Pentecostal churches are complaining. Mr. Olawale Akoni, SAN, give us an overview of all of these. Why do you think the churches are complaining? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, sir.
This is a new area which is causing a lot of ripples in the Nigerian space, and it's important that we look at it and ask ourselves the really relevant and pertinent question. Now, I think I want to start off by saying that our religious organizations and other sort of associations who are incorporated under the Companies and Allied Matters Act, the CAMA, needs to understand that the era of no regulation is over. And I think it's important that they bear this in mind. I have heard different kinds of, I've seen different kinds of clips from different church leaders, threatening fire and brimstone and different kinds of things. But it's important that everybody understands that the era of no regulation is over. I think we should set that stage on the ground. You would all recall that a few years ago, there was an attempt to do this through the, I think it was the Financial Reporting Council or something, and it caused a lot of ripples and led to one of the major people's leaving office as CEO, and then different happened and all that. But now, this whole thing has now been brought together back in the Now, it's important that we all understand that for years and in the past, these kinds of associations have not been subject to any regulation whatsoever. And it's actually a very strange thing that we're not subjected to any regulation. Any form of association which interfaces with the public and also receives money from the public in whatever shape or form, and now seeks or gets the waiver from taxation need to be regulated in one form or the other.
Okay.
Let us start by looking at what the law, how these organizations are actually registered. Okay. The law says where two or more, this is section 823 of the new CAMA. It's always been in the old CAMA anyway. Where two or more trustees are appointed by any community of persons bound together by custom, religion, kinship, or nationality, or by any body of associations established for any religious, educational, literary, scientific, social, development, cultural, sporting, or charitable purpose, they can be registered. Mm. Now, it's important that this thing doesn't only apply to churches. It applies to social clubs. It applies to different kinds of associations. Once you agree to come together and you are not a business concern, if you're a business concern, you will register as a company or as a business name.
Mm.
But if you don't go that route, and then you'll be subjected to taxation and regulation by the Kama. However, if you're going the route of incorporated trustees, there was no regulation. Now, there's a scheme to regulate those associations. And I think what we should all try to do is to now examine the scope of the regulation, how the regulations are going to be implemented, whether they are fairly put together, whether they will be implemented properly, and they will not be abused. That, I think, is what we should be looking at. But the situation where people think that they will not be regulated, everywhere in the world they are regulated. Everywhere they are all regulated. And those kind of associations, the key part of it is that the money that you have and your assets are supposed to be used for the purpose of the creation of the association. Mm. If it's a church, it should be for religious purposes.
Mm.
And then have schools and everything. But every kobo you earn has to be plowed back into that for that person. That's the opening thing I want to say. So, you have any other questions?
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's be a bit more specific now. For example, pastors, they write books. They have schools. They do water. They do bread. And they make money from it.
Yes.
Now, what does the law say? Does the law now say, because you are making profit from it, you know, you must be, it must be treated not as not-for-profit or as, you know, a church or an NGO?
Good. If a pastor, Pastor X, writes a book, he writes the book as Pastor X. If he makes money from it, he earns money, he will pay tax on the money he earns.
Mm.
As simple as that. If the social and so church of the world sets up a school, the money made from that school must be plowed back into the school.
Mm.
Or plowed back into the church.
Mm.
Not to be distributed by the owners, among the owners.
Mm.
You distribute the assets or any money from those kind of ventures or whatever outside. They must be plowed back into that institution. So, you see, it's very important. So, it's important that henceforth these organizations should be run properly.
Mm.
It even goes further to say that if you're a trustee, except you are an ex-officio member of the board of trustees,
right,
you can't be paid a salary. You can't be, payments can't be made to you. But if you're ex-officio and you're a trustee because maybe you are GO or whatever, so you earn whatever you're going to earn. But you see, it's important that everybody realizes. You see, the way I look at this whole thing is that individual go set up a church and they treat the church funds as their personal funds.
Mm.
I mean, I can't name names here, but I've been involved in one where this reverend gentleman was owing the bank money.
Mm.
And he had gone into some business and he was owing the bank money. And the bank instructed us to recover the money. And the man was telling us that, well, he would give a payment plan and that he's looked at the church collections over the period and he can do 2 million naira a month
mm.
based on the collections from church.
Mm.
That is not is definitely against the law.
Mm.
So these things need to be, as I said, it is important that we separate a lot of these issues. Regulation has come and has come to stay.
Mm.
It is what kind of regulation and how the regulation would affect, would be implemented, that I think we ought to be looking at. I have my views about several of the sections in the newcomer.
Mm.
It gives too wide powers to the commission, and some of those powers are restrained, and they could be, if we're not careful. Those are the things I think we should be looking at and asking the legislature to review and try to put safeguards that will protect these associations in the long run.
All right, but finally, on this same karma issue, why do you think that the Orthodox churches, I'm talking about the Anglicans, the Catholics, the Methodists, they're not making so much furore? Why is it the mom-and-pop churches, what I call the mom-and-pop churches, where you see the billboard, husband and wife, and why are they the ones that are making so much furore over all of this? Is it something inherent in their constitution, as in the way they are made up, you know, that, you know, really, you know, becomes the issue? I saw a video of one saying, a church that I started with my money, you know,
yeah.
And so why would anybody come and take or superintend over a church that I started with my money? Why? Okay, go ahead.
I think you have hit the nail on the head. You see, most of these quote-unquote Orthodox churches are steeped in tradition and constitutional history.
Mm.
My church, for instance, the African Church, we have a constitution that has been in existence since 1922.
Wow.
And it's the rules are very clear. Nobody owns the church. Nobody owns the church.
Mm.
The Anglican Church. Who owns the Anglican Church?
Mm.
Who owns the Catholic Church?
Mm.
Who owns the Baptist Church? So they have put in place over the years rules, regulations, and systems and structures that protect the congregation as well as the public generally.
Mm.
Now, but it's a totally different situation. You're right. Someone says, I started this church with my money, with my sweat, and all that. And it's like a business venture.
Mm.
If you're going to set up a business venture, then go and incorporate a company.
Mm.
And there is a part of karma that allows you to set up a company limited by guarantee. But the rules are very, very similar to incorporated trustees. And you're going to get yourself into the same situation. So I think it's important that people, other parts of the world, the only other point is that maybe the Corporate Affairs Commission may not be the best suited institution to do this regulation.
Mm.
In England, they have a Charities Commission, which is tasked with this kind of responsibility.
Okay.
And they're very, very good at it. I think the Corporate Affairs Commission will focus their activities on companies and a different organization be set up to deal with this. But as I said, it has come to stay.
All right, it has come to stay. Karma has come to stay. Let's take one final break before we hit the home run. And of course, this song is talking about karma, 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 karma. Beautiful piece of music from Nigerian musicians. And of course, we'll come back for the home run. And then we'll be talking about the Chinese loan and Nigeria's sovereignty.
Stone boy, come to show them a grind.
Give me the copy of up today.
Nobody can stop we now. See the love what we get, it just the elevate. Virus can't catch me now. See my software, it be up to date. Girl, you look so cool. Make me wanna give you all and more.
Fine, baby, I know go 59, now you done crazy me. Fine, baby,
All right, it's Soul Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and you just listened to Karma there because we were talking about Karma. We bring positive Nigerian energy, play strictly Nigerian music, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Right now, we get into the final lap of today's Nigeria Discourse with Mr. Olawale Akoni, Senior Advocate of Nigeria. And we've treated three key issues, or four, if you ask me. Okay, three key ones: election tribunals, the NBA crisis, and of course, Karma. Now, on this home run, we are talking about the Chinese loan and Nigeria's sovereignty. Mr. Olawale Akoni, I heard earlier Femi Falana saying that it is a standard clause in most agreements of that nature that the person borrowing would not call up its sovereignty just in case the loan goes bad. Is it as simple as that?
Okay, thank you very much. Short answer is as simple as that. And maybe it's just a matter of terminology. People talk about sovereignty. It has nothing to do with Nigeria waiving or giving up its sovereignty. It's a total misconception.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening is that, it's so simple. When you countries are equal entities in the Committee of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
So, one country will not allow its sovereignty to be trampled upon by another country. So, a country cannot impose its system of justice on another country. What then happens is that, so Nigeria is a sovereign entity, China is a sovereign entity. If there's a dispute between the two countries, China will not subject itself to Nigerian courts.
Mm.
Neither will Nigeria subject itself to Chinese courts. So what then happens? The parties agree that we'll go to arbitration when there's a dispute. However, because you are a sovereign entity, you may decide not to give jurisdiction to this arbitration tribunal. So they say you are accepting by this agreement that you will come before that arbitral tribunal. You will waive your immunity on the basis of sovereignty. Just as in terms of execution. You see, because at the end of the day, if a loan is given to Nigeria and Nigeria doesn't pay back, so they go to court or to an arbitration tribunal, and the tribunal says, Nigeria, come and answer to this. And Nigeria says, well, we're a sovereign nation. We're not going to appear before the arbitral tribunal. So what's the value of the ability for these people to recover their money back? So it's as simple as that. There are standard clauses in this agreement. And maybe I can just read to you, because, we're all talking about this issue. We have not seen the agreements, but what they quoted in the papers for us to see.
Okay.
It says the borrower hereby irrevocably waives any immunity. What we're waiving is immunity on the ground of sovereignty or otherwise for itself and its property in connection with any arbitration proceeding pursuant to this agreement thereof with enforcement of the arbitration award. So what happens is that it's like you borrow money from a bank and then you now say, well, because I'm a nation, I'm not going to appear before the court. And nobody can force you to appear before the court. So how will they recover their money back from you if you don't pay? So it's not an issue of Nigeria waiving sovereignty. You can't waive your sovereignty. All you do is that because every country is immune from process in different places. So you can waive your immunity because you are borrowing money under that specific agreement. So I think we need to understand that it's not an issue of Nigeria giving up the sovereignty to all that. It's not like that. There are other issues that need to be addressed with regard to the loans. Did we even need to borrow the money in the first place?
Mm.
Is the money that we borrowed, was it being used for the actual purpose? Is it much more money than is actually required?
Yeah.
And things like that. What did the agreements passed through the National Assembly? Were they properly vetted and all that? All those issues are there. And could we have borrowed money from other institutions apart from China, bearing in mind what China is doing to other countries? All those issues are there. But the critical one about what people are talking about today, I think, is a non-issue. The Nigeria is not waiving or giving away its sovereignty to China. All Nigeria is doing, it is waiving sovereign immunity in respect of jurisdiction and enforcement.
And I guess that's honorable for anybody that really wants to pay back.
Absolutely.
Wow. You know, the way things go around in Nigeria, people don't know the truth or the facts of the case. They just start, you know, doing all sorts of videos on social media, abusing personnel, abusing people, and, you know, abusing minister, abusing, you know, and sometimes the National Assembly doesn't make our job easier because they don't even explain some of these things to the people. Wow. Okay. What a great nation we are. What a great nation Nigeria is. And I think it will be appropriate at this point in time to call it a day. I thought we were going to be able to take phone calls, but the way this conversation has gone, we are not able to take the phone calls because many things that you have been able to shed light on, enlighten us on, and of course, give us more facts and information about what is happening. Your own legal perspective to issues in Nigeria. And on that note, we'd like to say a very big thank you to Mr. Olawale Akoni, Senior Advocate of Nigeria, for being a part of Nigeria Discussed today. Thank you very much for being a part of the show. I'm sure we'll call you one more time or many more times once there are issues for us to discuss along legal lines in the Nigerian nation. And I'm sure our Nigerians in diaspora who are listening to us, they've been enlightened. They've gotten a lot more information because here we bring Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Thank you very much for being a part of the show.
Thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure being here. And I hope I've been able to assist in a little way to shed some light on some of these. Thank you very much.
All right, certainly you have been. And let's listen to this one from Timi Dakolo. It says, "We are a great nation. What a great nation. A country of great potentials we are, Nigeria, so that our people can know that this country is truly, truly blessed. I love this piece of music. Get goosebumps when I listen to it every time. Nigeria, a great nation." All right, thank you.
We believe in this name. we're united.